I'll just briefly go over the financial statements, and then I'll take any questions that you may have. Page one of our report is the independent auditor's report over the financial statements. Financial statements are the responsibility of management. Our responsibility is to provide an opinion over those financial statements that to present fairly and materially in compliance with GAAP. And we're pleased to say that we issued an unqualified opinion for the financial statements for fiscal year 2011, which is the highest level of assurance that you can receive over your financial statements from your external auditor. During the year, a new accounting pronouncement was adopted called GASB 54. It was a resolution previously during the fiscal year that the board approved regarding the adoption of GASB 54, and the financial statements reflect those changes as a result of GASB 54 being implemented. There's some information in the opinion that discusses that implementation, and then also a note in the back of the notes that shows a restatement, because GASB 54 required the education fund, working cash fund, and tort fund to be consolidated into a general fund for external financial reporting purposes. Your AFR remains unchanged. That's a regulatory report from the state, and you are going to continue to prepare your budget and your AFR in the same manner as you have previously. Page 11 of the financial statements is the statement of net assets. This is an entity-wide set of financial statements. It doesn't focus on any one fund. It focuses as the district's balance sheet at the end of the fiscal year, taking into account capital assets and also long-term debt. At the end of the day, the district had total net assets of $35.7 million. Next. Schedule is on page 12. It's the statement of activities, which is essentially an income statement on the entity-wide across all funds for the district. It takes into account your depreciation expense, assets that have been capitalized, adjusts for payments on long-term debt, principal payments. At the end of the day, there were $47.3 million of expenses. They were offset by $913,000 in charges for services, $8.3 million in operating grants and contributions, and about $300,000 of capital grants and contributions, which leaves about $37.8 million of expenses to be funded by other sources, which are primarily real estate taxes, personal property replacement taxes, state aid formula grants, investment income, and then some small miscellaneous revenues that don't necessarily fit into those categories.
So this is as close we'll ever get to GAAP.
Yes. This is accrual accounting.
Okay.
Yes. So this is your funds focus on modified accrual accounting, whereas your entity-wide focus on the full accrual accounting, so you take into account all the differences between the two. Right. And there are some reconciliation schedules that follow these pages to show you the differences between the fund account and the modified accrual basis income statement to the accrual income statement. At the end of the day, net assets increased $4 million for the district, which is good. And that is kind of driven a little bit more off of the fund financial statements changing, revenues exceeding expenditures at the end of the day. And then also there's some other reconciling items, because you have a depreciation expense that is greater than what your capitalization expense are. There's a few other timing differences. On the statement of activities, when you make a payment for your bonds, a principal payment, that's not considered an expense. It's considered a reduction in your liability. So there's some adjustments for those differences between the two bases of accounting.
Is that the one on page 15?
Page 15 okay. is the reconciliation of the balance sheet to the statement of net assets. Page 18, I believe, or yes, 18, is the reconciliation between the fund financials and the entity-wide. Okay. So at the top, you'll see the net change in fund balances, which is $3.3 million. And then you have some of these reconciling items for the differences between what's been accounted for on the fund financials to the entity-wide financials. Top, you'll see the first one is $788,000, is a decrease to what the net change in fund balances were, because your depreciation expense for this fiscal year actually exceeded the amount of expenses that were capitalized. So there's an additional $788,000 of expenses on the entity-wide. And there's a few other ones that are also itemized as well. What you'll notice, at the bottom of that reconciliation, the change in net assets, $4,068,955, actually agrees to the change in net assets on page 12. Yeah, page 12, change in net assets.
Yep.
There you go. A lot of districts tend not to focus too much on the entity-wide, but I think the fund financials are what you really monitor on a monthly basis, quarterly basis. That's how you really drive the district's operations. The entity-wide are our gap basis reports. They can be indicative of some, you know, if you're the financial position of the district is either increasing or decreasing. A lot of times it doesn't answer a lot of questions regarding, you know, change in fund balances and things like that. But it does take into account the entire financial position of the district. Page 13 and 14 are the balance sheet of the district's funds. What you'll note different this year is that the very first column is called the general fund. In the past, you used to have an education fund, and then you'd have your own trans, municipal retirement, debt service, and then you'd see your TORT, and you'd see your working cash. Well, TORT and working cash aren't in the financial statements this year. They've been consolidated into the general fund, and that's a result of GASB 54 being implemented. You'll also notice that in the fund balance categorizations, it was reserve, unreserved, designated, unreserved, undesignated, and across all the funds, those are all negative, or not negative, zeros, I apologize. And then in the 2010 column, you'll see that there were balances. GASB 54 being implemented changed the categorization of fund balances at the end of the fiscal year. There's about five new categories. They're actually all in detail in the fund financials on page 25, if you care to read that, to find out a little bit more about those new categorizations. But I'll briefly go over the ones that affect the district's financials for this year. You have a non-spendable, restricted, and unassigned. Non-spendable typically are for prepaid expenses, fund balances that are at the end of the year that are not in spendable form. The restricted fund balance, you'll notice that in most cases across all your funds, even the general fund, you have a small balance. And the $2,224 balance in the general fund is representative of the TORT fund's ending balance. Those funds are restricted for TORT purposes. All the other funds to the right of that are restricted because by the nature of those funds, they're special revenue funds, those fund balances can only be spent for the purpose of those funds, ultimately being restricted for the purposes of operations and maintenance, transportation. In the general fund, you have an unassigned balance. That's essentially the residual ending fund balance for working cash and your education fund at the end of the year. GASB 54 basically says the general fund, if the remaining balance is unassigned unless it's restricted. So you have these different tiers that are available. What's not in the financials this year is because the board hasn't committed fund balances, or the superintendent of finance and operations hasn't designated any fund balances for specific purposes. The board can do that too. If the board actually designates a portion of fund balances for a specific use through resolution, you can commit fund balances at the end of the year. The next tier of that is essentially the superintendent or the superintendent's designee doing that, which has been actually adopted in the GASB 54 resolution that was done earlier in the year. So at the end of the day, you have your assets, your liabilities, and your ending fund balances across all funds. Page 16 and 17 is the income statement for all of your funds. And what you can see is that at the end of the day, in the 2011 column, fund balance has increased from 2010 by $3.3 million. Primarily, that increase is really in the general fund, which I'll show you some additional schedules that allow you to do a little bit more analysis as to why that transpired during the year. The general fund has a $3.4 million increase, O&M, $426,000, and so on and so forth. What I'd like to bring your attention to is, you know, with the student general fund being added, it's kind of added some extra schedules to the financial statements, but you ultimately still have the same amount of information for analysis. The general fund has a budget to actual schedule, and then you'll actually still have an education fund, a working cash, and a TORT fund budget to actual schedule. These schedules can be found in the back under the supplementary tab, and I believe it starts on page 60. So on page 60, you have what they call a combining schedule. It's all the funds that make up the general fund so that you can still see a balance sheet for your ed, TORT, and working cash. In addition to a balance sheet, you also still have an income statement for the add towards the working cash funds. After that page, when you turn the next page, you'll now see your budget to action schedules for your ed fund, your working cash fund, and your TOR fund. So you still have the same ability to kind of look at your budget to actual schedules, even though you now have a general fund that kind of consolidates all three funds into one.
Is that going to go over? Is that going to go away over time?
I don't see it going away.
Okay.
It's pretty new, and the purpose of it, I think, was to get a little bit more consistency between the statement of net assets and your balance sheet. The restrictions are more consistent between those two schedules in the past. Where in previously, you didn't have a restriction in your last financial statements for the operations and maintenance ending fund balance, whereas now, if you look at that statement, it's actually clearly identified. I think it gave a little bit more ability to governments to actually officially designate different fund balances through resolution. So if you want to say, we're going to commit this amount of fund balance for this use, you can show that a little bit more easily by the level of authority that's granted that commitment. So there's a few changes with GASB 54. GAAP-basis financial statements aren't always the same as regulatory financial statements. The state has a regulatory dictated through statute as to how you need to present your financial statements, whereas GAAP is pretty much across, you know, the United States, and it's not necessarily as precise as AFR is. So
these were created to provide greater clarity and transparency for all forms of governmental agencies, not just school districts. And it's important to understand.
You know, if there's any questions about the financial statements, I'd be more than happy to take them at this point in time.
No, I think it's a nice audit. Nicely done.
Okay. Yeah, I think everything went really well. You know, I can kind of go on to the next report, which is a required communication.
Before you go
sure.
on, I just want to say thank you for really explaining GASB in a way that was concise and understandable, and it's been, what, 6 months since we started talking about GASB, and it's easy to forget the nuances of every GASB change, and you just did a great job. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. My fifth or sixth time around,
yeah.
Warm up to it.
the other
report is a required report that the external auditor is to give to the governing body and management. Part of planning and performing your audit, we're required to gain an understanding of your processes over key transactions and assertions within the financial statements. And then we're designing our audit around basically our risk assessment of the district's operations. Throughout that process, if we identify any risks, we're required to communicate them to the board and to management. We're pleased that we don't have any additional findings this year from the previous year. The finding that we have identified, which is pretty standard for most districts throughout the state, is that they primarily rely on the expertise of the external auditor to prepare GAAP basis financial statements. They don't have a staff in-house that prepares all the necessary footnote disclosures and all the accruals to convert your financial statements from cash basis to modified accrual to full accrual, and that you actually rely on us to perform that function. So that's actually been identified as a material weakness for several years since the risk assessment standards came out back, I believe it was 2008. And I believe the district continues to monitor that on a cost basis to benefit, see if that's something that they're willing to change. But I think at this point, this is something that's going to probably be a repeat from year to year. There were no other additional findings. I think everything went real well. So any questions about that, I can take them too.
What were the, there were three levels of
sure
concern, as I recall.
Yeah.
And which are?
You have a material weakness, a significant deficiency, and then a control deficiency. And they're actually defined on page one of our report. There are categorizations right on the face of that report. So there are different levels of potential misstatement within the financial statements.
As I recall, the only one that we had was really the financial accounting.
Yeah, in years past, I think that the business offices worked in tandem to kind of address some of the other I guess, risks that were identified. A small business office always has segregation of duties issues. You know, you may have one person doing several functions just because you have a small staff. What we've identified during our audit process is that we've seen several layers of review by the administration throughout those processes, and we feel that that review process, because it's operating, would detect a material misstatement, potentially even a significant misstatement, because you're monitoring your budget to actual, your change from prior year, you're reviewing your payrolls as they go out, you're reviewing your bills list, making sure your check registers are all for qualified expenses and things of that
nature.
And this
is a change from 7 years ago.
Yeah, I believe it was, I don't know if we identified it in the previous year of segregation of duties, the year before, there was one. But yeah, so part of our process is to kind of gain an understanding of the review that takes place over those interim financial statements. And we think that process is in place will allow you to detect a potential error in the financial statements.
Just two quick questions. What are you seeing with other districts in terms of the...
This particular
report? I mean, is it normal for, I would think a lot of districts would have the same issue.
Right, yeah.
Is that what you're seeing with other?
That's 100% true. Most school districts don't prepare external financial reports. They run their funds on a cash basis of accounting. Most of them don't prepare any of their accrual adjustments if they choose to report on a GAAP basis at the end of the year. Very, very few. I think we do upwards of 50 school districts, and I think that this year there was potentially two school districts that actually prepared their own financial statements from workbooks, essentially Excel sheets, but they still didn't have a system, you know, an accounting software program that could aggregate the data in this fashion. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think that's fairly consistent throughout the state.
Okay. Second question. Is there any additional recommendations that you would have for staff in terms of compliance with any of your findings?
No, not at this point. They would have been in our letter here.
So this is about as clean as an audit as we can
accept. An unqualified opinion on the basis of accounting is the highest level of assurance that you can receive from your external auditor. So we believe that these financial statements are fairly presented, materially correct.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. All right.
Nice
Thank
job.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dick.
Thanks,
good evening.
Nick. We'll see you in June.
Yeah. No, before that.
Maybe May. I don't know.
Oh, May.
No, I'm talking about that.
Yeah. And is this yours?
Phyllis is, I think.
Phyllis is. There you go.
Okay, then the next order of business this evening, at least on the agenda here, is the Compass Learning Odyssey proposal. Karen is due to get out of a meeting about 6:30, and she'll be in shortly after then to give that to present that agenda item. So the next agenda item we have is a resolution abating the 2011 tax levy for debt service payments for 1998 and 2004 bonds. As you know, we had a discussion this past fall leading up to the levy whereby it was the feelings of the board and the recommendation of the administration that we actually abate the amount of debt service payments for this year. Those payments are $2,727,800. We've already discussed or have actually transferred $1,727,800 from the Ed Fund, $1 million from the O&M Fund into the Debt Service Fund, which will allow us to abate the funds when this process comes through in the end of March. The end of March, that last week of March, first week of April, I'll get a notice from the assessor's office asking if we're going to have any changes to our levy. I've already spoken with the assessor's office. They know what our intentions are. This is just a formality of the paperwork that we need to have completed, and then we'll submit this to the clerk's office when we conclude this order of business, and then I will ensure that those funds are abated from the debt service fund so that we won't levy those funds come this spring and fall, for spring and fall payments. Any questions?
I just want to be clear. in the discussion portion, it says abating the payment, but really you mean abating the levy.
We'll abate the levy.
All right.
Yes, that's more accurate. Sorry. We will not be, we will be making debt service payments, but we will be abating the levy. Thank you. Any other questions on that?
I would ask you, what's the AFR going to look like? How do you account for this? I mean, how would you pick off that number out of a spreadsheet?
On the AFR for this year, you'll see it's a transfer between funds. It's the other revenue sources, so it's other expenditures and other revenues is where you're going to see the million, you know, the million from O&M and the 1.7 from the Ed Fund. So that's those are the cash transfers to which represent the resolution that was adopted in December, I think. And then when going forward, then when we actually go to pay the bond payments in next fiscal year, they'll still be paid from the bond and interest fund. There just won't be any tax revenues coming into the bond, the debt service fund, because we will abate it. We will have abated the levy. So the cash is there as fund balance, and we'll be paying those debt service bills for next year out of the cash balance.
So it won't. If I'm wondering if the question behind the question, and it might be then in terms of our community understanding that an abatement has occurred, what they will see is not an abatement as much as they will see a transfer of cash from our operating expenses to pay the debt. And so it won't show up as a...
Yeah, that's what it's... Because I asked Bob about Hinsdale 181s, and I went back and looked at their AFRs, and I couldn't... Concern,
yeah.
You know, if you didn't know and you just looked at the statements, you couldn't.
Yeah.
How much and when? And it was just, it didn't make sense. I don't know if there are notes that could put in the AFRs or something that, you know, there's like people know what happened.
Yeah, I went back and checked also, and even the gentleman that I sent you that email, he wasn't there.
Right, that's why I said in his recollection, I didn't think.
But
I think
they didn't abate.
I'm not sure what they did. I was trying.
What they did is they reduced. They didn't do an abatement.
Okay.
What they did is they reduced their levy. They didn't abate it.
Okay.
They just reduced their levy. I would have 14.
Really, I thought there was something with the transportation fund. That's why I wasn't sure.
Yeah.
The issue? How they did it?
Well, okay. I mean, we may be talking about two different things, but I do recall that they reduced their levy for the. An amount that they felt that they had received because of their referendum.
Right.
So, but they did that through just reducing the levy.
Okay.
They didn't abate it.
But I think long-term implications to that levy reduction then?
Yes.
But I think your question initially was, how will people know? How
if you just
do the communication?
At a spreadsheet,
you don't. Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be hard to tell.
And people won't see it on their tax bill.
Well,
the dollar amount.
The tax rate, they
don't have a comparison.
And I can't remember if the, now, in DuPage County, I don't know if there's a line item on the tax bill.
No,
it's just for the actual taxing bodies. But I believe, no, it's for the retirement. So,
yeah.
In looking at a spreadsheet, though, if you compared this year's AFR to next year's AFR, there's going to be a lot less or no tax revenue is being posted as revenue in the debt service fund.
Okay.
Because there is, we are not levying for it.
Right.
Now, considering that the levy is a calendar year and we report on a fiscal year,
yeah.
But if you compare those numbers, just took those numbers, you would then see the reduction because of the fact that there won't be those tax levies going into that fund.
Average person won't.
I think it's important that we communicate.
Yeah, none of this is the average person going to pull it out.
Right.
It's just even if somebody was trying to, a few years later, trying to figure out what happened
and didn't
want to go through all the board minutes and things like that.
So when this finally gets resolved, maybe we come up with a communication plan to put that out.
I was going
to
say, this is big news, and we should on our website or however you communicate. I mean, that's something when it's finally approved by the whole board.
Well, we always hear the other side of the conversation about how we have too much in revenue. So I think this is an important communication to get out to the community when that time is appropriate. And then I think, Steve, the other question, and I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but you know, what are the long-term implications of this $2.7 million abatement to our overall state financial score and things of that nature? So those are things I think we need to continue to monitor, and we will certainly do that over the coming years.
Well, I think, you know, we've had a lot of talk about long-range financial health, and we can't keep looking out and have and sustain and be have strong fiscal health if we, you know, continue to look at abatements
right.
as anything other than a kind of a one-shot deal.
You know, we made over $3 million in reductions a couple of years ago, and of course those reductions have significant compounding effects. So, you know, one of the issues or one of the effects of that reduction plan that we put in place a couple of years ago certainly is this result where we have an excess or what was deemed an excess accumulation of funds.
And so, we knew that that would occur.
Uh-huh.
You know, that by making reductions, we would see short-term gains. But that over time, those reductions compound to allow us to be more sustainable over time, and we have to be careful about understanding that and how that balances.
I think that's an important piece of communication out there.
How soon are these bonds? How are they paid off?
2017 and 18. There's two separate issues that are out there. They'll both be paid off, like I said, one in 17, the other in 18. So we're done with our last bond payment for the fiscal year 2018.
No one knows for sure if it's related. Was you issued by referendum or a specific project?
No, they were
building bond referendums. These were the 97 referendum. And we actually, the 2004 is because we refunded a portion of those in 2004. But we can't refund any of them anymore.
Right.
We're done.
We've refunded as much as we can. So that's why they were originally, what, 97 and 98?
97 and 98 were the bond issues. Based off of the 1997 building referendum. So these were all building bond referendums.
Okay, because I was like 2004.
Yeah, no, we refunded.
And I think they deemed that as a general obligation refunding school bond series 2004.
Correct. But it's all still connected to the 97 and 98.
Correct. Any other questions on the abatement thing? All right, then the next order of business this evening. Karen, you want to go next?
Sure.
Okay.
This is a proposal for basically kind of an online resource. And Christina Kellum and I actually looked at it 2 years ago and saw some possibilities and just kind of decided to wait due to the cost and some other things we had going on. But the feature that we like about it is that it interfaces with the NWA map scores that we are already using. So they get the scores directly from NWA. We don't have to do any of that importing or exporting. And then it'll create a learning path for every child who's taken the math test. And the learning path starts with their lowest goal strand area. And as you know, math kind of, they didn't add new test questions in that, but they realign some of their things to the new Common Core strands. And so these goal areas would be aligned with that as well. So essentially, each child would have this learning path that they could, at home or at school, log on any time. They'd have a username and password, a very simple one, that they can just be working on the skills connected to the areas that are assessed on the math test. And that. So it provides an intervention for those kids who are struggling and have some weak areas, but even for those kids who are at or above grade level, it would still give them kind of where that next route they should go, kind of down that path. And I mentioned in here, too, I kind of asked what their research has shown, that they saw that double-digit growth for kids when districts implemented with, I guess, fidelity would be the best word. We're not suggesting that every child has to get on, you know, be on the program for 30 to 60 minutes in reading or math every week. We would, for certain kids, that, you know, we would try to get them on as much as possible because it is connected to, it's online, they can get on a computer, it could be done in a classroom. You don't need an adult there kind of instructing and things like that. But one of our former math specialists, who's now an assistant principal in Schaumburg, she was very familiar with the program and kind of talked about it because she was she lives in District 93, and her boys would just come home and she would just have them work on it every night at home as part of their homework routine. One of the other things that we're considering is really to kind of use this maybe in lieu of kind of our summer school program. The summer school data, again, that we got back was pretty inconsistent. We saw growth for some kids, no growth for other kids. There was no correlation, really, to the number of days they attended. And so we're putting out that money and not getting the results we would like to see. And I guess, you know, we've had some conversations at GCC a little bit around that. I think a lot of the districts just are going to kind of keep going forward with some kind of summer school program because they're worried about their at-risk kids. So we'll continue to have conversations. You know, might we do kind of an open lab? But my guess is for our kids who can access a computer over the summer really aren't going to come to an open lab, and those that we had an open lab for, we didn't provide transportation. So we'll kind of consider that a little bit. But I like the fact, I think it gives our parents a resource that they could use, especially when they ask, what are some things I can do to help my child at home, or how does, you know, what are things connected to math that I can do that would help them. They do have Spanish for math only, so nothing in the area of literacy yet. And so part of this proposal includes the Spanish module for kindergarten, first, and second only at Churchill. And the reason why I wouldn't consider it at the other schools, they're not receiving instruction in Spanish. It's all in English, so I would just assume them be using the English module. And only going up to second grade, the reason would be as we're really trying to transition them out, and that transition's already occurring, and we have them take the math test in second grade in English anyway for our second graders in the bilingual program. So we'll try that with that K-1 and 2. And once you have it, it's for as many kids. I've spoken with the other districts, and District 15 has started with their middle school. And, you know, I think they were looking for kind of an intervention connected, you know, that they could link to math and that, and they're bringing it down to their third and fifth next. 93 did district-wide implementation, and 16 is doing limited licenses that they're going to try and focus a few kids on it instead of going widespread just because of the financial commitment. And they're looking at the summer school alternative. So, anyway, the price is there before you. I mean, I'd love to be able to take advantage of that 5% discount, but I'd like to do it over 2 years just because of kind of where the budget's at this year. So that's kind of a summary of the program. I did have the specialist, the literacy and math specialist, kind of look at the program. They had seen kind of the younger module, so it's very typical of what you would see with online computer programs. In math and literacy. They actually do have a science module, but because we don't do the science test, I wouldn't suggest getting that module. And in NWA has like a language arts test that we don't administer to our kids, but it's all part of that module, so kids could still get on that. And I do mention, too, we'd like to do the train-the-trainer module of training just because this time of year, trying to get all the teachers together and that. I'll work with Lori if after the train-the-trainer we implement. That way there we can at least get kids on it now and using it, knowing that we'll still have, by the time we move this along, it kind of be closer to March or April, where we could consider some things for the summer. And then if we need to go deeper with the training, particularly around the reports, that the teachers can get and our parents can get, we probably look at some of that more intensive training next school year when we've got more time and can make an impact. So that's kind of a summary.
Well, and I would note that the cost of summer school is about the same cost of this program. And as Karen said, we've been disappointed in the results of our summer school program. In both attendance and performance, there's not a high degree of commitment to students coming to school in the summer that we found, and we've tried to do it a couple different ways. And so since this can get at intervention for students, it seems like a better trade of dollars for us at this point, and rather than continuing to invest in summer school when families aren't invested in it. But, and actually, this, a lot of the students that we've had in summer school are not necessarily the students that we actually need. The students we actually need are choosing not to go. We don't have a way of insisting that they go. And so this looks like a better exchange of resources for us. And
you know, the first year we did summer school, we did kind of the 3 weeks and then 2 weeks in the fall. And feedback from teachers and parents, we just went with, you know, kind of that July this past year. We didn't necessarily see any results. We even kind of gave that incentive. They got money back if they had good attendance, and it didn't always make an impact with that either. So we were trying to figure out ways to really, but it would appear that there isn't a high, there's a few families who are very interested in summer school, but again, some of those families, their kids really didn't meet that low level criteria of over 30%, which you know, it just kind of presents other issues at summer school that, you know, really wasn't designed to reach some of those types of problems. But any questions?
What subjects did you say it's for?
It'll cover math and reading, but in reading it's got a language arts module, so there'll be some of the kind of traditional English skills that they can access, where there'd be more like capitalization, punctuation. We don't give that assessment. They do have a component of this is where you can go in and direct kids to do certain things, so that would be another, but we would start with the direct path that's created with their math scores rather than teachers going in and getting kids other avenues.
And then the and so that's what summer school is also the math, the reading.
Right.
What, you know, I guess like if a kid was doing this, how long would be new or keep their, I mean, is it something some kid could cram in a week and be done, and then they're just repeating the same stuff?
No, it should get progressive. It should it'll get progressively harder. I mean, as they become successful, it'll kind of keep taking them along that learning path, because it's trying to ensure that growth on a math test so that they're acquiring those skills along the way.
Let me see. I had a couple more questions. My oldest son is doing, first they did with Everyday Math or something online. And then now, for some reason they don't do that anymore, they do something called Extra Math. Where do those fit in?
We've been using a program called Fast Math, which is, they've all got a kind of a login and that, and it works on their basic facts and that. Where the Extra Math came from, and Fast Math you can't access at home, we were just using it at school. Extra Math is kind of a newer program that was released that works on math facts, and you can access it at home. And because it's free, the math specialists are really encouraging teachers to direct their parents to that as another resource, but it just works on the math facts. But we've had great response from it. You can set it up where you can get like a report, or it'll tell you like how little or how much your child actually practiced and how well they did on it. So it's kind of become this great free resource that we're encouraging parents to use at home. But again, just the facts. But we want fact fluency. That's an important area. So this isn't going to work so much on, this isn't going to be working on facts. It's going to be working on those goal strands, geometry, measurement, those things that are assessed on the math test and part of our Common Core standards.
Mm-hmm. They use flashcards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know what? I would still use flashcards.
I think people still use flashcards. You can, and you can get flashcards probably in online games or.
Well, that's what I, when my son was doing it, that's what it reminded me of.
The concept of flashcards has kind of gone away.
Right.
When you're looking at fact fluency, I mean, it's a proven strategy.
It's all digital now. There's nothing. There's no paper. It's all digital.
Yeah. Shucks.
Karen, I have a question, and in terms of this product. This is, we're creating this resource to help kids to help kids grow so they can increase the MAP scores. So essentially,
growing and learning.
So this is another teaching aid that helps teach the kids to the score or to the MAP score.
Well, and I would say it's not teaching them, it's practice.
Yeah. It's extending their learning.
Okay.
And the other thing, too, is, and that's what I want to be careful, it's not just about improving their MAP score. That's one of the benefits of it. Because NWA is aligning to the Common Core and making those adjustments, it's still connected back to the curriculum, which is the standard. But the NWA test has probably been more skills-based, and not that that's a good or a bad thing, but even within the Common Core, there are all these kind of those prerequisite skills to even get kids to that higher level thinking. You're not going to find kind of that more posing problems and that. These are going to have specific answers, but there's a part of that on our standardized test as well. So the improvement on their math scores is going to be a benefit, but it's still working on those goal areas. And we have teachers right now who look at their math data, and then they kind of put kids into groups, and then they develop targeted learning lessons around their weak areas anyway to kind of improve that particular kind of standard, whether it be vocabulary or literary elements, those different things within reading. So it's just another resource and avenue for the kids to work on. And I think the teachers will continue to still look at that part of targeted learning.
When is MAP supposed to go away?
MAP is not going. You're thinking of ISAT.
Okay.
This is not aligned to ISAT. MAP is our local assessment that is, it's students take it 3 times a year, and it shows their growth.
So that's not going away.
The only way it's going to go away is if the state replaces it with a growth measure that is comparable, and we would be
similar
redundant. Well, if it would be similar to MAP, that's tied to the Common Core and is performance-based and can show growth, then we might not pay for MAP if we have to do it through the state assessment program. But it's not ISAT.
There's nothing online right now to do that.
No. That's part of the Performance Evaluation Reform Act work. And the work of
Park. 16 or Park. 17?
Yes.
Okay. So I was trying to try to tie back to that.
Yes. And we're not even talking about ISAT.
Yeah.
You've heard us say ISAT is we'll continue to take it because the state gives it to us, but we really aren't looking at ISAT scores. But we do look closely at our MAP scores because they're individually based, they inform instruction, and they can help students set goals for improvement. So this then is another tool to help bolster that.
And it shows the growth over time, where like the ISAT test is just the end of fourth grade, mid fourth grade, this is what they should know. It's an adaptive test, so it will kind of, those kids who can keep going, it'll extend their scores. There's two assessment groups, and kind of reference one, PARC, and the other one is Smarter Balance. And Illinois is one of the PARC states. Smarter Balance is actually working with NWA because they've committed to an adaptive test, and PARC is still kind of putting proposals out there. We all hope they would be adaptive, and I think they're starting to get a little bit of pushback because their last kind of statement was that it wasn't going to be adaptive, and I think people are very interested in that. And so I think they recently put out kind of a proposal. These are kind of some of the things. So they may or may not kind of come to the table with NWA. But even if PARC doesn't, and even if we were to decide we weren't going to have the NWA test, as I mentioned, the product itself, teachers can still create kind of learning paths for kids, so it would be, at that point, an intervention or an extension type resource that teachers would have for kids, whether it might be through centers and that, where kids can go on and keep learning. But
and it's aligned to the new Common Core,
right,
which is critical.
Mm-hmm. One more quick question. What would you anticipate the useful life of this program be?
You mean like in terms of after 5 years?
How long can you use it? You can use it for 5 years, you can wear it for 10 years.
Well, you're leasing it year to year. You're hoping that the company that provides it adapts it and
continues
and takes the...
Right, like this past year...
You're not going to renew the lease that year.
They did a number of changes to it because of the Common Core. So districts that had been using it just because of that yearly fee, all of their modules were upgraded.
So I would say that the anticipated life is as long as it provides the kind of data and information and support to student learning that we think is giving us a reasonable return on our investment. As time goes on, there probably will be another product that will be created as the Common Core is fully implemented and as we see what the state assessment is. And you know, of course, we would look at that time to see, does this look like a better product than this? And there's no loss to us, you know, in terms of having made an initial investment.
Right.
Since you have an annual fee.
I mean, we're putting $150 out.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess my question is, you know, how long can we use it? If what you're telling me is this company has a history of being able to adapt on an annual basis as needs are identified. I guess I'm comfortable with that.
Well, and here's something to just consider. We spent $130,000 last year on summer school, about a little bit over that, and that's instructional costs.
Do we do busing as well?
Mm-hmm.
That's
a total cost. So about the program. The program's about $139,000, something like that, and that's an annual cost. And it only touches so many kids, and it's only for the summer. Whereas this is an investment about that much initially, but all students have it all months of the year, outside of school. So I mean, if you just even equate it against that, the investment is far more frugal.
Bob, is this budgeted?
It's in her budget.
It's part of Karen's budget.
So it's part of the budgeted numbers that you gave us previously.
It's part of what Karen's accounted for, and we'll make sure that it fits in the budget that we present later in the spring.
In other words, she has her budget and determines how it will be utilized. And
this is not, we're not adding new money.
She's using
this
money that she has.
This is allocated funds. It's how it's...
Correct. It's why she's also asking to split it over 2 years so that she has half of it out of this year's budget, which she can afford, and then budget it for next year, the remainder of that.
Yeah, there's no reason not to do it that way because you've got to get the 5% either way.
Right.
So, okay. And answers all my questions.
So then Karen will be taking this to the board and
for discussion.
For discussion and in action as we usually roll things through the approval process.
Is there any way to see a demo of it or something at the board meeting?
I can't. The rep I work with, Howard, he would love to be able to come to the board meeting, and I don't know if we want that much. We'll figure out something.
Maybe we can set something up late one afternoon so board members want to stop in.
Yeah, whoever wants to. We don't need to do it during the board meeting.
Yeah.
I think that's best.
Okay. Any other questions to Karen? Then the next order of business will be 2012 summer capital projects. As you know, we've already taken to the board for the finance committee for their support and ultimately to the board for their authorization to go out to bid. We have now gone out to bid. The bids are they're out on the street now. We expect them back mid to the third week of February, and it will be running it through our presentation and approval process to the Finance Committee and the Board. Additionally, what I would like to do is begin to put together the bid documents to continue implementation of the 21st Century Classroom, in particular the painting steps that we intend to implement in the three remaining elementary schools. Last year, I believe the numbers came in at about $50,000 for Lincoln to be painted. I've estimated $70,000, but considering that the buildings themselves are all about 50 to 55,000 square feet, I would say that the amount that I presented here, 70,000 per building or 210,000 altogether, is probably a little high, but I wanted to just present you with sort of the largest worst case scenario. So what, the only involvement the architects will have in this is to help me put together the individual building painting schemes. My office will be putting together the bid documents, incorporating them, and then going out to bid. So there won't be much professional, there won't be many professional fees in this for this proposal. What I'm looking for the Finance Committee is support to go out, prepare these bid documents, and go out and actually get pricing. Of course, we won't know this until until April, when the Hadley projects come back, when this comes back, and we'll have to make a decision at that time and prioritize how we're going to actually move forward, because all as we have right now in terms of pricing estimates. So I'm just looking to for your authority to go ahead and continue to do the work, and we'll continue to update the Finance Committee and the Board as we move forward. Any questions?
Are these having their own scheme, or are they the same as the other?
No, they will all have their own individual schemes as well as colors. So we've already engaged the architects last summer to put those together. What I would do now is just some real basic work with the architects, ensuring that, you know, we've assigned the right color to the right wall on the right building, things of that nature. But the base work has already been done. So when I create these bid documents, or my department creates these bid documents, what I would be looking for is their sort of proof, their eye to say, hey, you've got the right wall with the right building and so forth. So.
Yeah, I guess I don't have a problem with this. The only other thing, and I know you and I had talked a little bit about how we kind of do a review of last year's summer camp.
Yeah.
I know we still have some things hanging out there. I'd really like to see before we are at the same time we're doing this, so that, you know, I always have to look at the lessons learned, what did we learn. You know, there's some things from last year we're looking to apply. Also kind of gives a summary of
well, I can tell you that, and I'll be happy to get that together, but I will tell you that we did come in under budget. So that much you can be rest assured that we did come at $50,000-$60,000 under budget.
What's still hanging out there?
Some work to be done at the front of this building, of the new facade that was put on. I wasn't quite happy with some of the molding work and caulking work and so forth that they had done. I wasn't quite happy with it, so they were going to come out, and lo and behold, the week they were going to come out and do the work, we get hit with a bunch of bad weather. They delayed. I'm not going to pay them unless the work is done.
Yeah, until the
work. I'm not going to pay them until their work is 110% done. I hate to pay a contractor that have to try to fight with them to come back. So, and that's why this has been hanging out there so long, because I wasn't completely satisfied. And this is actually with a subcontractor, the general contractor that we've been dealing with. So Light Construction has been more than cooperative. It's the person that we hired, the company that we hired to subcontract that work on the facade. So we're working on it. We'll get it done. And I'll be happy to start accumulating that information for you. Rest assured, we're under budget. I'll do my best. I'll do my best to get it together with what we have together. And the other things I wanted to mention is that I won't be here on the 13th. I'm going to take a couple of days off. So if we wanted to delay the first of all, is I could put the information together and then email it to the Finance Committee. If I'm not going to be here, I don't know that we actually need a Finance Committee meeting, because nothing is really pressing. We won't have bids back, or I've spoken with Karen, I've spoken with Lori and Mike. Nothing is on their agenda that would necessitate having to have a Finance meeting on the 13th. But I can certainly put that information together to you for the Finance Committee and mail it off to you guys. So at least you can start to take a look at it.
Where are you going to be?
That's not on the agenda. That's a personal question.
Nicholas, that's...
Can't you Skype in?
Oh.
You can't do that if you are not legally working.
Oh, I thought that was just a board member.
Yeah.
Okay.
For mental health purposes, we don't allow it.
If it carries over to the following meeting.
You know, I'll start putting that information together. I'll get it out to the finance committee. But those are the plans. We will not have a finance committee on the 13th. But I will put it together for you guys. Okay?
Oh, what can you do?
Okay, now that you put me on the spot there. Where are you going to be? Okay, then I know Ann would like us to finish up pretty quickly here. A little after 7, we want to get to see that 21st century classroom furniture. And by the way, I was just up there. It really looks great. This is a chart that you, or a spreadsheet that you guys have seen over the past couple of years. Just real briefly. To date, we're running $1 million. Our revenues are less, $1.1 million less than they were last year at this time. Really, the big dollars are the personal property taxes and tuition, which I don't think is going to be much of a problem as we move forward. I expect that to catch up by the end of this fiscal year. But what I would like to point out is a significant reduction in restricted state funds and federal funds. As indicated in your report here, the written report, the federal funds really are an activity of the Hadley Project having been completed, and we received all the funding from last fiscal year and the year before, 9, 10, and 11, when we received all of our funding, federal funding, through the ERA dollars. The other area of concern is the $230,000 received less in restricted state funds, and as you've seen in some of your budget summaries here, we have, to date, even to here we are now, the middle of January, we have only received a few thousand dollars for the fiscal year 2012 in categorical grants. And those are mostly, I believe, through the food service program, Phyllis?
The free lunch. The state free lunch program.
Through the state free lunch program. This dollar here that we've received, where are we at? $1,264,000 or roughly. Is for last fiscal year, and I provided a written summary in another area of this of the board reports, where it says what's all applicable to fiscal year 2011. But we've also tried to estimate what was included in the last audit, meaning the one that you saw presented earlier this evening, as well as what's going to be accrued into this fiscal year.
So it says only $1,600 is for the current fiscal year.
Wow. So, but we've collected everything from the 11.
From 2011, but you can see very, very little. So, and, you know, this has been a feeling of Phyllis's for the past couple of years. Someday, one of these years, the state's going to catch up and just finally say, we're not going to pay our third or fourth quarter or first, whatever quarter may be. We're not going to make those payments. Who knows? This may be the year where we don't get all the money that we were appropriated or expected to receive. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's interesting. I was reading about the income tax, and it, to me, you know, that was supposed to be a 3-year temporary tax. But I can see the state government, I can see the governor's office already starting to lay the groundwork for that needing to be a permanent tax increase. So we'll see what happens over the next couple of years.
One quick question. Where would I see the loss of the pre-K grant reflected in? What category?
Restricted state funds. Mm-hmm. Unrestricted state funds is general state aid. We get that timely. We get it twice a month, 22 times a year, and we've never had a problem with that. What we're having problems with are special ed, transportation, all those other types of special categorical fundings. There was an article I read just over this past weekend where there's conversation out there where the state might finally drop funding for transportation because it's going to get rid of that mandated sort of declaration in there for transportation where the state is required or does pay for a child that travels greater than a mile and a half from his home to the school, and also for hazardous conditions. They're talking about eliminating that mandate, which would alleviate or allow the state to quit funding regular transportation. Now, we only receive a very small portion, about $20,000 under regular transportation. I don't know that they'll ever get to special ed transportation, where we receive about, I think last year it was $387,000. Any questions on the revenue side? Okay, then I'll move to the expenditure side. Could you scroll just a minute, please? Part of items. I can scroll, can I? Okay. Next slide.
Can you move the spreadsheet over a little bit?
Sure.
That's good. Perfect.
That's good.
There you go. Okay. I'll just go through the dollar differences, salaries, and the rest of the cost of this first half year versus last, the same period for the last fiscal year. We're about $462,000 greater in salary, or 4.8%. Benefits are $151,000 greater, 7.2%. Purchase services is an area that we had a problem with last fiscal year, too, when we expected to be sort of on target, but at the last quarter, we've got some substantial bills for transportation. So it's an area of concern. Supplies and materials, we're good. Capital outlay is really just a fluctuation of our capital projects that we do on an annual basis. And then the others, principal and interest. Well, we know what our principal and interest payments are on an annual basis. That's how we budget, so we expect them to be fine. And then transportation is always the wild card. We never know what our tuition. We never know what that's going to end up being. We can see that we've already paid, we've actually paid $149,000 less this year than we did from last year. So that'll continue to be an area of concern. Overall, we have $348,000 more in expenses, or 2.04%. I did take out the transfers that were made for the interfund transfers that we made to the Ed and O&M fund, just to provide a little greater clarity, and so that these numbers wouldn't be so distorted, because otherwise it would have shown a $2.7 million transfer for the revenue side as well as the expenditure side, and it would have really distorted these numbers. Mm-hmm. So these numbers are exclusive of those interfund transfers. Any questions?
Bob, do you think we need to talk about? You've got the expenses, you've got your revenues way down, and your expenses.
Sorry,
your revenues are down, and your expenses are up.
Well, I will tell you that. Remember, $550,000 of this reduction, or over half of it, is a result of federal funding that was going to go away anyways. I think it's important for us. The thing that I am most concerned about is the state's obligation for categorical funding. That's where my biggest concern is. And another thing that I just wanted to mention, a few years ago we had expenditures trending up 4 and 5% annually. We're down to about 2% now.
I don't think if your question is should we be concerned about our expenditures exceeding our revenues, and I would say at this point in the budget we feel pretty much in control of our expenditures. And as Bob said, that purchase services is an area that we examine to make sure that we are trending a little bit more even with what we would expect to spend.
And when you've seen the 5-year financial projections, what we're trying to do is close that gap between the increase in revenues and the increase in expenditures. We would like to see them kind of fly parallel with one another so that we're not ever put into a deficit situation. And with the 5-year financial plan that we have in place, we're in good shape right now. So, it's 10 after 7. If there's any other questions, we'll conclude this evening's meeting. Okay, hearing none, then we'll adjourn. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bob.
Thanks, Bob. Good job.